Hi, this is Sarah Coleman, and I am interviewing Daryl Brown. Daryl, if you could just introduce yourself, we'd like to know what you're charged with and what you're charged with in your current sentence, please.
Yes, my name is Daryl Brown. My current charge is first degree assault, and I was sentenced to 25 years, all suspended but 10.
Okay, and how long have you done on that sentence, Daryl?
So far, it's been 4 years and 8 months.
4 years and 8 months. And could you tell us a little bit about your charge, about what happened?
One night I was with a young lady, and at that present time, I guess she was involved with someone else. And she asked me to ride home with her one night. And unfortunately, the guy that she was involved with was following her. Well, not following her, but he was waiting for her at her residence and followed us actually into the residence. And once we was inside the parking lot, he blocked the car in. She got out, they got to arguing. A physical altercation between those two started. So I got out the car and basically pretty much tried to break them up. And once I did that, the guy turned and pulled a knife out on me. And tried to assault me. I wrestled for the knife. I took the knife and then I assaulted the guy with his own knife.
Oh, okay. So the knife belonged to the victim in this case?
Yes, ma'am.
So were they aware of that when you went to court, that he tried to assault you first?
No, ma'am.
The courts wasn't aware of that?
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, why didn't you make them aware of that?
I didn't make an initial statement when I first got incarcerated. And I never had an opportunity to make an initial statement because I ended up taking a statement in front of the court because I went on and took a plea.
Okay. So what happened to your co-defendant in this case?
She's home. Once I took the plea, they pretty much released her, gave her, second degree assault, time served, and she's been home.
Okay. So if you had an opportunity, to say something to your victim or if there was anything that you could have done differently, Daryl, do you think you would have reacted the same way or you feel like you did what you had to do in that situation?
No, I definitely wouldn't have reacted in the same manner. Once I retrieved the knife from him, once I did retrieve the knife from him, he was no longer idle threat to myself or her. Once I sat back and looked at it, I proceeded to attack him. Once I got the knife from him, out of anger, and so I definitely would take that back in that situation. I would definitely like to apologize to him and his family for the harm that I've caused to him, and I would also like to apologize to my family for paying away so long for something so stupid, I say.
Stupid being, explain stupid.
Stupid being not making the right decision.
Oh, okay. So you're not minimizing what happened to him.
Say that again?
So you're not minimizing what happened to him. You're saying it was stupid in your actions. Or reaction.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Definitely not minimizing what happened to him. I'm saying stupid because I could have thought that out and not reacted in that manner. That was a dumb, stupid decision on my part. Even though I was being attacked at one point, once he was no longer the aggressor, I should have been smart enough to back away.
Okay.
And call the police.
Okay. And so let me ask you, you've done 4.5 years off a 10-year sentence. What have you done with yourself since you've been in there?
then I took a few classes, one in particular that's helped me out a lot, Alternative to Violence Project, ABP. I also have taken a cognitive course, Thinking, Decision, and Change, to help me with my decision making. I've also taken a few computer classes to help me with my computer skills and that sort of thing.
Okay, and so if you're granted, I'm going to advocate for you at parole tomorrow. So if you're granted parole, what are your plans?
If I'm granted parole, first and foremost, I've spent most of my time obtaining my CDL. That's something that I'm really interested in. I've been studying for the past 6 or 7 months. I have a daughter that's in college. She's a 20-year-old daughter, and I have a younger daughter that's 11. So I definitely would like to rebuild the relationships that have kind of sort of fallen apart since I've been away, just because of distance. So I'd like to spend more time with them. And I have a couple of grandkids, two grandsons, and a granddaughter that I also would like to spend a lot of time with.
So what happens if you're put in this same situation again, Daryl?
I'll definitely, first and foremost, I would try to turn my back and get away as fast as possible. And also, man, just pick up my phone and call 911.
Absolutely.
I have to understand that I'm not the law. You know what I mean? That's what the police is there for, to help protect us as citizens. So I'm going to have to use them. And have them let them do their job and not try to do their job for them.
Absolutely. So what makes you think that Daryl deserves a second chance? That your sentence should be cut short? What makes you different from any of the other people that are going up for parole?
I think what makes me different is that I've actually thought about what I've done and understand what I've done. The cognitive course that I did take, the Thinking, Decision, and Change, has helped me out tremendously with understanding how the thinking process leads to your decision making. So now I'm pretty much more sharper in that area. And also, the Alternative Violence Project that I've taken is also coincide with the Thinking, and Decision, and Change. Helps me out a lot with dealing with violence and learning alternatives to violence.
What does your adjustment record look like since you've been incarcerated?
I had one ticket since I've been incarcerated. I was sharing a cell, man, a guy was sharing a cell in Hagerstown, and they found something inside the wall, some drugs inside the wall. So it was, they offered me 60 days lockup, or if I went in 40, I would have received 120 days. They was going to do what they call an override on us. And my thinking with that was to hurry up and get out of lockup so I could get back to doing my programming and get back to work. So and I took the 60 days. So I have one ticket since I've been incarcerated. That's it.
Okay. And have you met any instances of violence that maybe you avoided since you've been in there?
Can you say that again?
Have you met any instances of violence that you avoided since you've been in there as a result of the classes you've taken?
Yes, ma'am. Not actually. They didn't turn out to be violent, but in my old thinking pattern, it could have been a violent situation. But yes, my opinion, inside these gates, time to time you run into situations that 9 times out of 10 could turn violent if you're not a thinker.
Yeah.
Luckily I had those classes, so I was able to avoid those situations.
So do you feel like prison, do you feel like that it helped you to a certain extent, or I mean, how do you feel?
That's a tricky question for me. those two cognitive classes have helped me. Prison itself, the environment, the way it's set up, certain situations, it's kind of like a setup sort of thing. But those classes itself definitely have helped me. But I cannot really say being in prison, let me rephrase that. The environment of being in prison, no, ma'am.
Well, explain, because, you know, we don't understand out here. So what would you, I would like you to expound a little bit more on that, because that's interesting.
The environment here in this system, I've noticed, it's pretty much, it's a gang-oriented environment. Mm-hmm. Down here in this region, well, not just this region, but other region also, they tend to have more control over what goes on inside the prison than sometimes in the COs. And it's a lot of leeway where if you don't conform to certain situations that they would like you to do, it can turn into a violent situation where it can be your life or his life.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that this system actually protects or shows enough strength for our security. I don't know if it's an overwhelm or overtime or what have you that they're doing, because a lot of the COs are kind of lax. Those situations tend to arise in this environment, and they don't pay attention to it, or they're too sleepy, or their reaction time is slow. And then sometimes it causes guys to get hurt.
Wow. So how is it that you were able to go in there and you not, you know, conform to the gang life and stuff like that? I mean, how were you able to maintain your individuality and not join the, you know, not join a gang or a clique?
Being older and coming from a different place where we didn't pretty much deal with gangs, I was able to stay away, and then just taking on my own thinking, being my own man, learning to think for myself and not having to think, have someone else think for me or make decisions for me.
Awesome.
Being strong enough to say no and kind of, you know, walk away or just totally avoid these guys and these places altogether. Sometimes it might, I have to sacrifice, maybe not use the phone for a week, because they're taking up the phone or what have you. But, you know, if I want to get out of jail, those are sacrifices that I need to make.
Mm. I love it. Thank you. You know, I do these interviews. I mean, I would like to say it's as much for me as it is for you guys, you know, because I learned something from each and every. I don't think I asked the same questions to anyone. And I kind of just like feel my way through it. But, you know, that was an interesting outtake, you know what I'm saying, on prison and stuff. Because I know that, you know, on the outside looking in, a lot of people, okay, they'll see an assault. You know, they'll see a stabbing. And they just look at the assault and the stabbing, but they don't get the gist of why people, you understand what I'm saying, are forced to defend themselves. They're just looking at okay, he's in prison, he's a criminal. You understand what I'm saying? He's just, you know, he's just continuing in his, you know, criminal behavior. And that's not always the case. You know, sometimes it's, you know what I'm saying, is defend or be killed. Kill or be killed.
Yeah, and it's funny because you have guys that sometimes they have to defend themselves, and they become the aggressor in the situation, and they be the ones that end up looked upon badly. But the whole time, someone might have came to them or been trying to rob them or what have you, but just because they defended themselves, it's not, okay, you don't rob me, and y'all go about your business. You know what I mean? It doesn't happen then eventually they'll come back, and instead of one guy, this next time will be 6 or 7. So it's kind of like you set up for a lose-lose.
Wow. So what do you think the administration could do more to counter that mob mentality that they have?
More control over what's going on. I mean, I shouldn't be in an environment where 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, you got guys that don't even sleep in your building is roaming through your dorm. You know what I mean? It's totally not safe for a lot of guys that maybe can't handle their own or that's not just straight up and down stand up men. It's just not a safe environment at all. I mean, I understand being out here that you want to have the gangs, the prison pretty much cannot stop it, stop the guys from forming or hanging together, but they need to cut back on giving workers all this overtime. Now, to get some people here that's a little more serious about doing their job. I've been in the federal system, and I didn't went all the way as far as Memphis, Tennessee, doing time in the federal system and back over to West Virginia. And so none of those prisons operate in the manner that this one, since I've been out here, that I've seen. This stuff is ridiculous.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
So if I could speak with the powers that be, you know, about what happens inside of prison and stuff, you know, just coming from, you know, a prisoner's point of view and whatnot. You know, I mean, what would you like to say? What would you like me to convey to them, Daryl, about prison, about you, about this experience, about how, you know, because they're forever saying that their guards are, you know what I mean? It's a boiling point that, you know, the guards are in danger and stuff like that. What would you like to say to counter that?
I would tell the powers that be, they will have to hold their staff accountable. And lend an ear to us sometimes. You know, as inmates, they always look at us as that we're wrong or we just have to conform to whatever is said and done by staff. You know what I mean? And that shouldn't always be the case. It doesn't make any sense, man, that from the FA on down to just the CO2, no one cares. They just don't care. If you mess up, we put you in a cage and transfer you to somewhere else. You know what I mean? It's just a run wild environment.
So you don't think they're doing anything to really rehabilitate you guys?
No, it's no rehabilitation out here in the system at all. At all. And I'm going to speak for the whole murder system. I've only been in three prisons, JCI, Hagerstown, and here. And majority of my time I spent in Hagerstown. Hagerstown was a little better with the programs that they offered, the things that they've done. But being here, and this is my last stop, and it's supposed to be the transition period to the street. I mean, for like 6-7 months while I was here, wasn't no program, not even school. You know what I mean? And then if they do have programs, the counselors and stuff that run them, you know what I mean? Like, it's one program here, the Voices. It's a victim's impact, and it looks highly important. With the parole board, from my understanding. But the guys that take it, they might get 7 classes out of the whole deal because she's never here, and you get a certificate. So you really ain't lying about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, breeze your way through. Everybody's faking it to make it.
Wow. Okay, we have about a minute left. I also, you brought it to my attention about your case manager. You've only seen her once, and that was last year, whatever. And, you know, I know that there's a concern that you're getting ready to go up for parole, and she's going to make a recommendation. And how can she make a recommendation when she doesn't have any of your paperwork or anything like that? She really doesn't even know you, and yet her opinion is viewed upon highly from the parole board, so... You have about a minute to address the parole board. What would you like them to know?
Actually, she doesn't know me. personally because I seen her in the hallway one time after the parole board came, and I pulled up on her and asked her, could I speak with her? And the first thing she said was, what's your last name?
You have 60 seconds remaining.
The case managers are assigned to people by the last name. So I told her my last name, and she was like, okay, you're one of mine. And I'm looking like, okay, I've been on your caseload for 10 months now. And she didn't know who I was. That was the second interaction I had with her. And each time after that, I've seen her in the hallway. I've sent request forms down, asking to see her because I know the parole board was coming up, and I wanted to get her my new home address and a few certificates that I...
You have 30 seconds remaining.
Since I've been in, and to no avail, I still haven't seen her to this day.
What is this case manager's name?
Mrs. Amos.
Mrs. Amos. Okay. Daryl, I appreciate your time on this impromptu interview. So I thank you so much, and I pray that all goes well for you. Tomorrow I will advocate to the best of my ability, and thank you so much. God bless you, and stay encouraged. All right. That concludes this interview. And I just appreciate, being able to speak about the parole aspect. And so I appreciate that interview. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening.